This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ready now.
What are we talking about?
Villa, maybe?
What's our vibe? We're kind of on a Renaissance vibe, aren't we?
Usually.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Obsessed with beating Birmingham City. We have to be obsessed with winning every game, regardless of whether it's Birmingham, West Bromwich Albion, Derby County, because our obsession is to get into the top two this season, or the top six if we can't make the top two.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. MyOldManSaid.com nominated for the FSF awards that we have no chance of winning. And joining me, first of all, Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
From, where is it, Bristol that you came from?
I was in Bristol last night, yeah.
Were you raving, Chris?
Kind of. Well, kind of. Me and a mouse.
What kind of mouse?
A dead one.
care to explain?
You creepy man.
I was in creepy. Bristol with Deadmau5 last night, which was great fun.
Halloween was like weeks ago.
I know.
Also joining us back from the dead to keep on this creepy theme. Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome back from the dead.
Thank
He's
you very
back
much.
In the game.
Listen, you know in the lead up to a derby, one has to take in serious meditation.
So that's why you've crept out for this.
It's tantric
thing.
With videos of
you and about 10,000 other Villa fans.
No,
you're just
no,
like
no,
the
no.
Blues fans. You just turn up when the Villa play Blues.
whatever. You all live in Lichfield and insert recurring jibe.
Excuse me, what's your postcode again?
Listen, sorry, we've been through this.
Sorry, I forgot to do the podcast guest security check, the postcode security check.
listen, doesn't matter. My spirit, my animal spirit, is very much at Villa Park at all times.
It's all right, we'll let you off. There's some websites out there, Villa websites, that were ran by people who had never actually visited Villa Park. Right, well, it's the Blues derby on the horizon. It's just a routine 3 points. Well, there's a quote for a Blues podcast to pick up on and run next week. Hopefully it's a routine 3 points. We'll get on to that in due course. Mm. First of all, the main bit of the show, obviously it's been International Week and feels like the last game against Derby was months ago, but we've obviously discussed that in a previous podcast. Since then, I've had the pleasure of meeting Villa's new CEO, Christian Perslow, at the Aston Villa Fan Consultation Group meeting. So we'll go through the points of that and first impressions, etc. Then, I don't know, we'll go through the kind of issues that are floating around about the season so far, and then obviously looking ahead to the games leading up to Christmas. are Where Were You When We Were Good is a blues derby game, actually when we weren't that good, actually. It was under Graham Taylor, but it's more a lesson in complacency. So we don't just turn up expecting to win on Sunday, because I think it's going to be a bit of a battle. I think if we were playing that game, let's say 2-3 weeks ago, I think I would probably put my money on the Blues to get a result there, don't you think?
It's too tight to tell this time, isn't it?
Oh no, we'll hammer them.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit.
Yes.
That's right, the spirit that made Britain great.
Let's, anyway, enough of this championship nonsense. Let's get on to the 3 points and talk about the sexiest new tournament in the world of football. Point number one, UEFA Nation League. Nations League? What do you call it?
Either way, football's coming home.
The last few days have been a revelation. The England game was... did you watch it, folks?
No. Oh.
Rodgers?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. We can have a conversation then. when Croatia went 1-0 up, I thought that was it, really, because I thought there's no way England are going to pierce the formidable Croat bat line. But obviously they'd only played on Thursday, so they were prone to get a bit tired. But did you celebrate when they got the second, when they got the winner? Did you punch the air?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think the thing with England is that we've got the makings, I think, of a genuinely top team, and I think it's where can we... Is this the right sort of format of competition? I mean, that's how we're discussing it in that context, aren't we, I suppose? And it's World Cups that count.
But no, I mean, I think this tournament is pretty good, because we're talking about having, you know, can England progress from the World Cup? And in this game, if they'd had lost that game or even the score draw, they'd have been relegated from the top tier. And that's where they were heading, obviously, until the final few minutes. But winning it, they've suddenly topped a group with Spain and Croatia, and it is a step forward from, let's say, a World Cup where people were kind of whispering under their breaths that we hadn't actually played anybody really good until we played the Croats.
No, I think we only have to look at Germany, I suppose, because Germany are on the other end of that scenario, aren't they? They've just been relegated from their group.
Yeah, and Holland are reborn again after obviously scoring that late equaliser and getting through ahead of the world champions, France. And, my favourite game was what the Swiss did to Belgium after Belgium had gone 2-0 up.
They were within 17 minutes, weren't they? And then
absolutely
hammering.
Absolutely hammered them. Funny enough, the person I was watching it with, I was saying, oh, most people, probably England fans, were thinking, oh, Belgium will qualify and... out of that group and probably win the tournament in the end. But then I said, oh no, the Swiss are going to turn this round, win 6-2, and then just storm through in Portugal. And they were just one off making my prediction sound very scary, because that would have been pretty good prediction.
What's your prediction for Sunday?
I don't know. I think we'll talk about it later. I just want to go straight to point number two, where Nigel Kennedy, a couple of days ago, played a concert in Munich. It's actually at the weekend just gone. And I think he had four musicians with him, and they were all dressed in Villa shirts.
I like Kennedy. Kennedy's...
But got some bants.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. And to be fair, he's always flown the flag for Villa through thin and thinner, you know. Oh, I do like that.
And just in case you didn't get the link there, a dear listener, Munich, as in Bayern Munich, Aston Villa beat Bayern Munich in the European Cup. 1982, bit of a history lesson there. If you didn't know that, what are you doing listening to this show?
Spread the word. The other local fans really appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, spread the word. We were used to be European champions. But no, Nigel Kennedy obviously taking the piss, basically, out of people in Munich. I'm sure they had no idea. How many people in a room of, let's say, 2,000 would have got that?
Yeah, 2,000 people in a classical music concert.
In Munich. How many people would have gone, the bastard? Heckle him, boo! Yeah. Anyway, right, point number three, I had the pleasure of going to the launch of the new book that's come out this month called Ticket to the Moon, Aston Villa, The Rise and Fall of a European Champion. Good book. I'm almost at the end of it. At the launch was, I think, half the team: Kenny Swain, Tony Morley, Ken McNaught, Colin Gibson, Gordon Cowans. Then there was a couple of players from other eras, Gary Thompson, who obviously played in the team under Graham Taylor that got promoted, and John Dean, who was just a few years before the team that won the league, and he was more of a 70s Villa man. And Ronnie Saunders, Ron Saunders' son, and Tony Barton's son was there as well. So I had good chats with Ken McNaught, Ronnie Saunders, and Steve Stride as well, who was there. But there is this running theme of those guys are not, let's say, celebrated in the way they should have been. And they've been pretty hard done by in the last few years by the club, just, you know, ridiculous politics. And
yeah, the club certainly don't parade them, do they?
No, and they're kind of rustling around in the shadows of the club when they should be celebrated a lot more. And interestingly enough, moving on to the meeting with Christian Purslow, who met the fan consultation group, Aston Villa fan consultation group, concentration camp.
Sometimes it does feel like that.
Slip of the tongue. The first meeting, it was Christian Purslow's first meeting with the Aston Villa consultation group. So it was the first opportunity to get a real good, look and insight into the guy. And one thing that struck me straight away was standards. He said straight off the bat that he hasn't seen anything in the first month that he can't take care of and improve and deal with. And I think that's
everything's so low, there's nothing I can't put my hand on.
No, pretty much. So he hasn't seen anything that has him flustered, put it that way. And so, which says a lot, really, considering... Mm. I mean, I've been to loads of these meetings with Keith Wynas and... Dr. Tony popped up, and Dr. Tony was reaming off fantasy. There was hardly any kind of pragmatic approach there, and it was all about positive thinking. But, you know, you actually have to do something to improve things. But, you know, straight away, Purslow, I mean, when we're talking about the sponsors of the club, people turning their nose up at betting companies, and obviously there's been a lot of talk about how much of the championship have how many betting companies are the shirt sponsors, and it's pretty much like, I don't know, I can't remember off the top of my head, it's something like 85%, 90%. And Purslow was basically indicating that he would be looking for something a bit more, let's say, prestigious to fit the kind of level of how the club should be regarded. To give you an example of the difference between, let's say, what we've come from, Keith Wynas and Dr. Tony, and Christian Purslow, is the tannoy. The tannoy was a big bugbear of mine, which I'd mentioned to Keith Wynas every time. I said, this is just not good enough. You can't hear it. It makes your ears bleed. It's something that every Villa fan who goes to Villa Park, ask them about the tannoy, and they'll give you...
They won't be able to hear you for a start because they've got permanent hearing damage.
So, I did the last draft of the agenda and mentioned about the Doug Ellis... tribute, where I couldn't hear I was in the upper Holt and I couldn't hear a word. So this is at the Swansea game. I couldn't hear a word of what was being said. And funny enough, Purslow agreed with a lot of the points. He said some of the points. He said, I've only been here like literally a few weeks, and I understood 100% a lot of these points. And one of them was he'd gone to a lot of care to make sure that this tribute to Doug Ellis was a good one, and it was with a lot of sentiments. And he said, I was sitting there and I couldn't hear a word. And he said, I have signed off that there will be a new tannoy and we're going to get a new tannoy in. Now, that conversation with Wynas was always, yes, I agree, we need a new tannoy, but we're going to have to wait until we're promoted, until we have the money to do it.
We haven't got any money.
So it was all about using TV money, basically, to fix all Villa's problems. So in this case, it's not cheap to redo your tannoy. And obviously, there's that other angle where they say, well, we're going to have to do some, when we get promoted, we might rebuild the stand, the North Stand. So it's a waste of time putting in a new tannoy system and then destroying it and then having to put it in again.
Mm.
In my time dealing with them, there was always reasons for not doing stuff rather than a can-do attitude. But Purslow seems to be, he just makes it happen. If it's logical, if it's sensible, if it makes sense, it happens. And then you move on to the next thing. I mean, before we even got into the agenda, he came up with 3 points of his own. And one of them was Aston Villa, under his watch, will not change the name of Villa Park. So that was a load of bollocks by the Birmingham Mail.
Shock horror.
And also they were not involved in this 15-club championship kind of break-off league that was being proposed as a rumour in the press. I asked him about, as one of the listeners had sent me a picture of Bodymore Heath, the recon signs disappearing. So this 5-year deal of Recon Training Complex, was that the name?
Something like that, wasn't it?
It had all disappeared, and but nobody had said anything publicly about it.
Within 5 months.
Yeah. So, he said simply he gave up his provision to all his anything, you know, like contracts were all given up when he lost his majority share. because we asked what is the future of Dr. Tony, and you know, the line is, you know, for the foreseeable, and he used the word months, foreseeable months, he is obviously a minority shareholder. But he seems to have, obviously, on Twitter even, sunk away. We can't do Twitter with Tony anymore because he's like a little mouse. He's scurried back in his hole.
Oh, that's a shame.
And other things like, you know, social issues on period poverty, giving free tampons in the ladies, single-use plastics. This is something, I mean, he doesn't want to burden himself by talking about the nitty-gritty of catering and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, basically he said all this stuff should be happening already. I mean, he said Villa should be, like, leading in these things. This is, it's kind of almost embarrassing that we're having these conversations when it should have been company policy to have all this in place and to actually be leading.
Well, if they want the, you know, if they want Villa Park as a venue to be an arena, as it were, of international repute, it has to be able to stand up against, you know, some of the best
any other entertainment product. Because I think
you think about going to the NEC or the NIA for a concert. Yeah. You look at going to Wembley for either any sporting event or a concert, and they get it bang on.
No, you're completely right.
Villa need to think like that. The fans hate being called customers, but if you take the supporters aside for a moment. If you're talking about the consumer experience, and I hate using phrases like that, but when you arrive at Villa Park, you want to have a good experience.
Yeah. But I think that it's broader than that now, that, you know, fans are discerning customers, and I think the annoying thing is that even if, you know, you live in Birmingham or whatever, you go to Villa Park, you see the standard of the food that you can get in the ground and then the pricing. And then in the next breath, you could walk away from Villa Park and go to somewhere like, I don't know, Digbeth Dining Club.
Yeah.
For comparative money, you can get a vastly different experience. And you think, well, how can't a club like with Villa's buying power and infrastructure recreate or even engage with maybe even those organisations? And as you say, be doing these things already. It shouldn't take someone to arrive and come in and go, why are we light years behind everyone, you know, even locally?
Yeah, and you know, this is something he was trying to get his head around. And it is true. It's like this understated brumminess, if you know, not wanting to make a fuss and just accepting everything.
Unfortunately, it can come across as apathy, can't it?
Yeah, we need to set our standards higher. I mean, I've heard this expression, the Villa Way, and, you know, we've got to sustain the Villa Way. But the Villa Way doesn't actually exist. The Villa Way was something...
And if it did, it didn't work.
Pre-First World War, when we were actually, you know, setting standards and inventing leagues and being pioneers... I mean, recently, you know, every chance we've had of building legacy, whether it be the early 80s team or, you know, Ron Atkinson early 90s, we've always penny pinched and turned away and because we didn't feel we belonged at the top table, or, you know, we didn't think we should be aspiring to, you know, reach the sun.
We've been parochial, haven't we? That's the thing.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with staying true to your roots and remembering what because I think the last thing that anyone would want us to become is a soulless identikit football club. But at the same time, I think you can often look to the continent for some of these, you know, especially some of the larger, maybe not best European teams, but the larger and, well, best supported European teams. Milan clubs come to mind, and some top Spanish teams. You think that they're still integral parts of their community, you know, as well as being brand, you know, strong footballing powerhouses rather than brands, maybe strong footballing.
Look at what sort of Dortmund is.
Yeah, Dortmund's a great example.
The pillar of the local community, and it's run by the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, to his credit, he's very in tune with the kind of heritage of the club and the tradition, and I think that's a dropped catch recently in the last, well, ever since we won the European Cup, I'd probably venture that we haven't banged our chest. We haven't, as I said in that meeting, if you're an out-of-towner, you've a Villa fan from overseas and you've come for a rare trip to Villa Park, you can walk around that stadium and see no sign of us winning the European Cup anywhere.
Mad. It is absolutely mad.
We've discussed it before, but, you know, things like, you know, you walk around town and, you know, you walk around the centre of Manchester you've got huge shops for City and United. You go into Liverpool and you have Everton and Liverpool, you walk into the centre of Birmingham, you wouldn't know there's a football team in the city because Villa or Blues, neither side have a shop or any presence in the city centre.
Yeah, I think the way retail's gone, you know, we're not going to have a shop again. But, you know, there's a call, maybe let's have a ticket partner where you can buy tickets. But also, like, things like somebody suggested at this meeting, you know, you get in at Birmingham Airport. Welcome to Birmingham Airport, the home of Aston Villa.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. It's pushing that identity and...
But it's building a brand, building a global brand, you know. I've landed at Abu Dhabi airport and you've got Man City daubed all over the place.
Welcome to the home of Manchester City.
Yeah. That's the dream. That's the dream. Well, just, how's it be Damascus or somewhere like that? I don't know. Something.
Well, it could have been Beijing. Welcome to the home of Aston Villa. But that didn't go to plan. So no, it was a very interesting meeting. But the most interesting thing was the tone of no messing, the kind of like business that element. Oh, which
he seems to have been like that from day one, hasn't he? I remember his initial press conference with Dean Smith, and he was sort of very blunt and said, "This is, you know, there's a job to do, and we're going to get on with it," in a very understated but very sort of laser focused way.
Yeah, and I think the press conference you're talking about was the actual first time that anybody had suggested that to get promoted from this division might actually take some work
to play football.
I've seen DMs in that first season when we were in the championship, DMs from players in the early few weeks saying, oh, 1,000% we'll get promoted this season. You know, all other managers and players from other teams think we've got the best squad and everything. So there was this complete complacency and
delusion as well.
Nobody actually thought that you actually, you know, had to knuckle down to it.
Mm. Well, it's this sort of the galling arrogance of the new regime and the club as a whole, really, that it was just sort of, oh, we're going to blow everybody away and...
We'll buy,
God, were we wrong.
We'll buy their best players and it'll be as simple as that. And I mean, even like some of the social media this week has been almost, you know, again, it's like we're expecting, because we've got Bolasie and we've got Abraham, you know, they haven't actually clicked on yet, those two players, as far as I'm concerned. And it's not just because we've got them, we're going to get promoted. You know, we're going to have to fucking work for this.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the frustrating things for the fans who are a little bit more measured, is that we're where we are this season, certainly, because we haven't been very good. But everybody knows that it's probably another two gears that this team can go into. Mm. You know, they played very well at Derby. Who knows what team will turn up against Blues and then against Forest. But if that team gets some consistency, some continuity, keeps the form going, there's no reason that they couldn't have a run like Fulham had last year.
Yeah,
of the assets that we have. I mean, players like Bolasie on top form and Abraham on top form shouldn't be anywhere near this division.
Yeah, as Purslow says, the nucleus of the club is obviously the team. It's, you know, it's what happens on the pitch, and it has to be. That is the laser focus, because that's what everything runs through. I mean, which sounds obvious, and it is, but it's something that, as I said, there was complacency. Like, you know, after we beat Wolves,
and with all the "we've got our Villa back" nonsense.
Yeah, we've got our Villa back and all this kind of crap. And then you look at that QPR, the crowd were complacent, the players were complacent, and we got a rude awakening, you know, consecutive games against Bolton.
Mm.
I brought this up in this meeting with Wyness. I said, I do not detect a boot camp mentality, a focus. But Purslow seems to have it. There's no, like, you know, joking around. It's more, there's a job to be done, so let's crack on.
Business-like.
Yeah, even with, you know, we've talked about, you know, the tone of the media and the socials and stuff that gets put out. You know, last season it was all, oh, let's put videos of them sticking trainers to the wall in the changing room. And it's just, you know, it's all very good and well when you're 10 points clear at the top of the table, but when you're languishing and you're not quite at 100%, it just comes across that you're fucking about.
I think that's the point.
It shows
as well.
A complete lack of focus.
I mean, we are languishing, not just, you know, we were languishing at that time, but we're languishing in the second division of the domestic leagues. And it's refreshing to finally see, I suppose, that we reflected after that small clutch of interviews. It was the first time I think I'd watched anything in a long time on AVTV that had been put out that I thought, bloody hell, this is watchable. But actually, you know, the questions and the answers, it didn't feel like generic throwaway stuff. You know, it was quite measured, to take Chris's word. They were measured responses that you thought, you know, that's finally, we're talking about what we need to be doing. You know, I'm not, you know, we've been talking about a raft of issues that they're peripheral stuff, that the main thing is getting out of this division, and we won't do it without, you know, look at all the rubbish that we've had to put up, all the bollocks narrative from Dr. Tony that led us to nothing. And it's of no surprise, because the very basics were never there. You know, when, with the formation of even this podcast, you know, two or three seasons ago, you know, it was easy to label it Prophet of Doom, but nothing on the pitch suggested we were going to get promoted, did it? And it gave us no pleasure to say I told you so. And I think that we've arrived at this juncture here finally with a, you know, an opportunity with a manager who's seen by many as progressive. And I still think there's work to be done on the squad. And as you say, there are individuals who I think have got another gear or two. But the games and results like Derby show us what massive potential we've got, and we've got to now turn that into all of the examples of teams that have got out of the league by brute force.
Just finishing on the frivolous nature of the social media and that kind of media output. I mean, one of the things I put in the agenda, which I knocked up the final draft on, one of the examples I gave was how when Villa had found some form and they were putting the results together at Christmas, they were doing those videos where they had that two-bit internet comic dressed up as Steve Bruce, very shabbily, like a tramp version of Steve Bruce, doing Santa's Grotto.
Terrible.
And, you know, that's demeaning the Villa
taking
manager.
Taking the piss out of our own manager. Yeah.
Sir Alex Ferguson. Would he allow that to fly? Would Brian Clough? Would Ron Saunders? Would Pep Guardiola? No, they wouldn't be demeaned by their own club. And is it any, you know, demeaned in front of their own players and their fans? And that December, we had suddenly went into a shocking run of form. Obviously, I'm not saying it's related, but it doesn't help because you're not focused. It's taking the focus off what the aim is, what the prize is. And there's only one thing, all this bullshit of engagement.
It means nothing, does it? It doesn't mean anything.
It's content for content's
sake.
That
marketing department is obsessed with it. And they copy, you know, they're on LinkedIn looking at other people in, you know, who did the same job in Bayern Munich and other clubs, and they copy it the next day. There was something on.
It was Leverkusen, wasn't it, last week?
And the next day, it's the same thing, copied. And it's, you know, it's just a bunch of shysters, really.
Yeah.
And it's completely throwaway content. It's just content for content's sake.
Yeah, it should all be moving in one direction. And you know, that is promotion. And within that remit, keeping the football context, you can be inventive and you can be funny and you can get people on side and, you know, moving in the same direction. You don't have to be, you know, patronising.
But don't you think the best content comes after we've won a game impressively and look like promotion contenders? I think the content writes itself then. You know, look at the stuff that's spilled out in the last week or so, and that's great because actually it's the most organic stuff. It's real rather than, I mean, a lot of the things over the last 2-3 years have been telling us that we're on the, I don't know, on the edge of actually doing something significant, and isn't it all coming good, or it'll come good soon, when all the evidence pointed to the contrary half the time. And now we're in this, it's a bizarre place to be, actually, because we're going into the Blues derby. Derbies can be, what's the word, they can be not necessarily barometers as to how your season will go, but it comes at a time where we could really use a back-to-back win.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, this could really be a springboard to something, but also it could be a huge deflator mentally if we don't get the result.
I think if Villa win their remaining games this month, the two home ties against the Blues and Forest, I think we'll be striding into that difficult run of 6 games in December, and the other clubs would be, you know, pooing their pants a little.
I think we discussed it before, didn't we, Dave? And it was the thing of Villa have to, off the back of the derby win and having 2 clean sheets and various other things, go into the run of games of November, December, and then you look at the January fixtures and they're reasonably favourable, especially the home games.
They've got to win them all, bud. They've got to win those December games. They've got to win those January ones. They've got to win those February ones. They've got to win those March ones. April.
Maybe April.
And that game in May, they've got to win that as well. Yeah. Then we'll be good.
They've got to see the run of games coming up as an opportunity, not look at it and go, oh, that'll be difficult, that'll be difficult. Yeah. They've got to have that, you know, the positive side of being arrogant.
As Dan says, you know, if you get the back-to-back win, then that suddenly gives you your first foot in, and then you take it from there. But they'll need to match. I think, Monks, Blues, I think they will come with a bit of fire in their belly. I mean,
they're organised. They're an organised team now. Now the team that came to Villa Park last year under Cotterill was a shambles.
Yeah.
And their fans admitted it. You know, they didn't turn up.
Didn't even get a foot in that game at Villa Park. I mean, the Blues have been a bit flaky recently, but they were on a solid run. Was it, how many games was it, 10 or something that they hadn't been beaten?
It was 10 unbeaten, wasn't it? And they'd won about 3 or 4 on the bounce.
Yeah, I was chatting to a Blues supporter when he was talking about those 8 draws, and he said, yeah, we should have won them all as well.
Yeah, there's been real signs of progress, haven't there? I think these Monk, to be fair to him, has really sort of quietly gone about his business. You know, after all the chaos they had in the summer with embargoes and all sorts and not being able to buy players, the team he's built is punching massively above its weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan doesn't sound really convinced by that.
I'm kind of like, I feel quite Dickensian over here. It's like Ghost of Derby Day Past, where... And I'm also very conscious of what might be cut out and appear in a Blues podcast.
What do you feel with derbies? Because I've always felt this, that especially at the moment with where Villa are at, with the sort of the financial disparity between the two clubs, we can't win really on Sunday. If we were to smash them 4-5-0, everyone would say, well, you've got a multi-million pound team.
Yeah, well,
and if you get turned over by Blues, they're going to get lynched. So ultimately, it's one of those games where Villa just have to turn up and just get the job done.
I think we need to be professional. My big worry about Blues is if they've got a striker who's in great form.
Yeah.
I think that's a worry for us.
And we've got a goalie who's not.
I think I was going to come to the goalkeeper
Come on. I mean, it's like 3 clean sheets in the last 5 games, isn't it?
We have a an ability to turn, I think, even maybe half-decent goalkeepers. I'm thinking Sorensen. You put them in a Blues derby and they seem to just turn to jelly. And we're all scarred by Enkelman.
Especially goalkeepers from that kind of hemisphere, that kind of northern European, Scandinavian...
Especially ones who are desperately trying to trade on being good shot stoppers.
I think that's, you've pretty hit the nail on the head there. If he can keep his balls, keep his faculty together, what's a good description? If he doesn't pussy out,
yes,
then I think Villa will be all right. But if he feels the pressure, and if I was the Blues fans, I would be if they were behind the goal, then we'd have problems, I think, because they could really wind him up and focus on him.
I just think I want to go back to what Chris was saying about that Monk's done a really, really good job for me. I think if you were to take away the name Birmingham City from it and say, look, this is the job that he's done and this is where they're at in with the constraints that he's had, they look very organised. And I think as well, he's the kind of manager where if you were looking at our team, my worry is he'll be targeting someone like Nyland because it's the obvious weak link, I think.
Yeah.
Fact, you know, irrelevant of what you think of, you know, I want him to come good. I want him to do well. I've had a couple of clean sheets, which is great. But
He's had 3 in recent games, but he hasn't been under pressure in those games.
No. And I think that this is the kind of game where these derby fixtures, especially looking back over some of the games, you know, they can turn on the first goal, particularly. On a sending off, and then you can find yourself under very sustained periods of pressure.
But Villa are at home, and they're also I mean, that's obvious, but that possession-based football they're playing, and we saw it, and we've seen it properly. Let's say away from home so far against QPR, even though we lost that, we should have won that.
Yeah, we should.
And against Derby, and obviously, the players are still learning, but Nyland is a part of that in terms of his distribution. His distribution has not been bad. He's got, you know, pretty decent variation, let's say. And this is half of the player. I mean, if we're just playing traditionally and they're getting a lot of free kicks and dead balls and they can put pressure on us, then fair enough, he may crumble. But if we control the game like we've done in recent games, then, you know, he might have to make the odd save. He's a shot stopper, no problem. It's just that if there's sustained pressure and that ball keeps swinging into our box, but we might be in a position where Blues don't actually get a foot in to do that kind of sustained pressure.
As you said, if Villa go into the game and play their game and not the occasion, that old cliche, you know, if we want to play sort of that ball retention game, I think we will, as you said, control the pace, control the ball, and I think the quality then should show. If it ends up becoming one of those, like, everybody launching it back to front, horrible games of football, which a lot of these derby games have tended to be sometimes, you're allowing a Blues team to come into it. You know, they're a solid team. They always turn up on Derby Day and they always work hard. And you don't know with the way Villa are playing yet, do we have the ability to play badly and get a result? Because the style of football we play, I would suggest that if our passing game falls apart, there might not be that kind of grind it out, get a scrappy 1-0 mentality. Yeah. Whereas I think Blues have got that sort of in them, so they'll just fight.
I think a lot of it kind of depends on the injury situation, which we're not obviously at the time of recording, not 100% on. But if McGinn plays, then I think we're pretty safe because that takes care of business.
I mean, I think you look at the Villa squad, and if ever there's a player, I mean, I've been saying this since August, if ever there was a new signing that's arrived at Villa that will absolutely flourish in a derby game, it's him, because he loves putting his foot in.
Yeah.
Yes, that does worry me. to be honest, if we're,
because I think
all cards on the table.
you go back to what Monk's targeting. I think he's targeting to get him off.
And the same with Grealish. I think they'll be kicking him. And I think because Hourihan's going to have to play a big role in this one. You know, he's playing in that deeper lying role, He's obviously, his game is there to be, we mentioned it before, like a quarterback and sort of really distribute the play, start things off. But if Blues start getting on top, you just worry if Hourihan has the sort of physical presence to really mix it if you know the game starts going against us.
Well, it's that stepping up, isn't it, of individuals. And I think if there's one thing I noticed, yeah, especially in the early part of this season where we had the changeover in manager, and you know, that we just mentioned the QPR game as well, where there are key moments and we haven't quite got that clinical edge yet, where, you know, I think Abraham's a fantastic striker and you know, all the attributes speak for themselves, has got a habit of missing big chances at key moments as well. And that's the kind of thing you mentioned Hourihan, where you think, right, he's in third gear here, where's fourth, yeah, and fifth. You know, you see those fantastic, yeah, free kicks that he scores that speak for themselves. We've discussed before, and I do think it's a fair thing to level at him, that sometimes he can appear quite anonymous in games. And, you know, combine that with, you know, you can often work very hard to create good chances in games like derbies, and we've got to take those chances.
Yeah, and because I think we're not going to get that many chances, because I think the Blues will be tight and compact. I mean, like Harley Dean's had a good season so far at centre-back.
And they're scoring goals. Blue, yep. You know, Jukovic and Shea Adams are scoring goals. I mean, you know, they've scored 23 and conceded 20. They've conceded 6 in the last 2. So it's one of those games where I don't think either team quite know which version of their side is going to turn up on Derby Day. Yeah. And you talk about taking chances. I mean, we sort of jotted down some stats, but since Blues went up in the Premier League era, the side that scored first only failed to win the Derby game 3 times out of 20 games. So it really is a first goal wins type match, this one.
He's been dying to get that stat in. I keep mocking him.
Absolutely.
I keep mocking him because I said, well, normally the first team who scores always, you know, pretty much has the best chance of winning.
But I said to you before, it helps. Since we've been relegated, since we went down, we've only lost one game at home when we scored first.
Yeah, well,
so we don't roll over
I'm
either.
Still not giving it the big wow.
Haven't we got a sound effect? Right, Motti. We can definitely get a sound effect.
Wow.
Wow. Well, really? That's amazing.
You mean like when we're 1-0 up, we normally win the game? Oh, my God.
You're saying we've got a better chance of winning if we're ahead?
Hey, that's might be something in that. Sorry, bud.
See, now I'm in the mood for the dub.
You fucking watch now. We'll be 3-0 up and lose 4-3, and I'm going to stick my fingers up so far at you.
Well, these crazy results have been happening. I mean, you only have to look at the German-Holland game when Germany were battering them. 2-0 up, should have been about 5-0. Didn't win the game. And Belgium against Switzerland, when Belgium were 2-0 up after, the first quarter.
Well, and who'd have thought we'd go to Derby and win 3-0?
Yeah.
That is true. And that maybe that's the point to sort of draw the line here on the Blues thing. I was not looking forward to this game with Bruce in charge.
No.
Far more optimistic now, and that's not, you know, we've sort of pitched it with all the caveats and whatnot, but I think that it's got to be seen as we're in much better shape as things start.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And, you know, as I said earlier on, I prefer this fixture now than, let's say, if it was 3 weeks ago. And I think, as we saw, this is a team that's in evolution. I'm not going to say transition, because I think there's enough players there. He sorted out the defence, and it's playing football, and we're playing out the back. Against Derby, you know, there was a couple of misplaced passes, but that's because we're learning, and, you know, you have to kind of forgive that in the process of getting to where we need to be. I mean, like, you know, Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, when he turned up in the first game, I think they, a dodgy back pass or a pass across the goal, gifted a goal in the first 5 minutes to the opposition, but they carried on playing. They won that game 3-1. And, you know, it happened against Derby. A few mistakes early doors as they're, but they're sticking to that principle of playing out the back. And that back four looks all right when it's playing, you know, when it's actually playing out the back. It's not, we're not in a position now because we use the ball more intelligently. We're not giving it away so cheaply. So the back four's under a lot of pressure, because I don't think this back four's great under pressure. But we don't have to be under pressure if we're not giving this, you know, ball away in a silly fashion.
I think it's the tactical thing, isn't it? Of, you know, he's come in and said, okay, what's going to be the best way of playing to get the best out of what
exactly,
I've got?
Exactly, yeah.
And they're all ball playing footballers. They're not, you know, we're not like a Cardiff last year. You know, most players, when you look down our team sheet, you think, oh yeah, they're all generally technically quite good players. They want to play.
Yeah, but we didn't really know that. We've just discovered it thanks to Smith. Oh, wow, amazing. I was sending all those players to the bloody glue factory, but so you've saved us. Mr. Smith, you've saved us a lot of money. I've reappraised them. They're all good ball-playing footballers. It's true, though.
And he's made it look so simple, really. Yeah. It's because he hasn't changed things dramatically, like formation-wise or selection-wise. It's just a couple of tweaks and, you know, shock horror playing Twanzabi at centre-back where he wants to play and building a partnership.
Having fullbacks in the right positions never hurts either, I think.
Because I think I mentioned when he first signed, when you look at what he's done in terms of, for want of a better word, physical achievements on paper, I mean, he's never finished above ninth in a league, but I think in the context, you have to see that as like his sandbox. He was like learning his trade at that level, and he's not, you know, they're like mock exams, essentially, that he's not ready for the... He's learning his trade, so when he gets a chance, then he can perform. I mean, obviously, I'm saying this with a lot of hope, but he seems very intelligent. Certainly the best Aston Villa manager in terms of post-match discussion and tactics.
The principle of what he's trying to do is it's hard to argue with, isn't it? And I'm, again, very hopeful, and you can't see into the future, but just taking what we've been discussing in terms of this desire to have a decent footballing style and a passing style with it, that I see it on a, you know, we talked about base levels earlier on in terms of humour, but I see it on a base level in terms of football, that the passing style that we saw adopted previously, let's think of the worst one, that was probably Lambert under this guise of, I don't know, Barcelona-esque football, when really it wasn't, and we neither had the players nor were we playing that style right.
Didn't you go to see Pep Guardiola at Bayern Munich?
And he must have been wearing blinkers.
Yeah, then he came back as if he'd seen the second coming or something. He said, now we are going possession football.
He
like switched it after that trip, but unfortunately it wasn't very progressive, and I don't think he really had a high press in place. And
that's the point, exactly.
There was a lot of sideways, backwards, crab style.
Well, there's just no intent. Yeah. You look at across the... I mean, we're nowhere in their league of these teams, but you look at all the sides in Europe who are dominating their leagues and in the Champions League, and it's, you know, it's your Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Juventus in Italy are just all conquering, and they all play a ball retention game with a high press. And you look at what Man City are doing in the Premier League, it's the same
thing. They pass and move you into submission, don't they? And that's the...
Yeah, and even like, you know, this season, you look at the way Arsenal are playing now, they've sort of started to get their shit together, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a high energy game when they haven't got the ball, and it's a controlled game when they do.
Yeah, I mean, against Derby, we were switching wingers and, you know, throwing a few little tricks in the bag just to keep them unsettled, the Derby defence. So yeah. It's
speaking of wingers, would you start with Bolasie?
Well, I can't say yes or no because I don't know the full extent of his fitness. I mean, if he's totally fit, yes, you would, but we don't know. He didn't have a pre-season, so that's part of the reason why he's been kept back. So I think he starts when, obviously, the manager feels he's ready. But at the moment, if he doesn't start, I think he's a great asset off the bench because he's impacting games. Against Derby, yeah. It was 0-0 before he came on.
I mean, at this level, when you get to sort of 60, 65 minutes and you look at the touchline and see a player of that calibre coming off the bench who is also quick, you know, if you're a fullback, you've kind of got to be dreading
it.
To be honest, I'm looking forward to him getting to full fitness, but I share a lot of hope. But he's got the potential, I think, to be an outstanding player, I think, within the squad. When you think about having someone on the run,
we've been saying this for weeks.
You think of that. I always worry about February, March, when you really want that momentum, and that's where we faltered badly for two seasons. Really, to have someone like that in the squad is.
He could be the make or break, though, the real difference in the second half of the season.
Yeah, at the moment, I think he's a card up our sleeve.
Absolutely.
That's how I would consider him. Right, we'll now go on to the Blues, Where Were You When We Were Good? But before we do that, just a shout out and thank you to the latest Moms patrons that have joined, Common Larkin, Michael Healy, Ronald Bride and Richard Saunders. Thank you very much for supporting the show and also the website and making sure we can run this without turning into some clickbait shysters or journalists. I haven't got the time to knock out 30 stories like the Birmingham Mail does every day on no news. Nothing's happened the last few days, but still there's... Anyway, to get more details, go to the My Old Man Said website and click on the Patreon option on the menu. There's also one on the sidebar, but if you're on a mobile device, just go to that three-line menu option. Just press that and you'll see it on the menu. Also, new feature, another way of supporting us is to be a supporter on the Facebook page. Just go on the My Old Man Said Facebook page and you can sign up to support us there. And we might start doing some live streams and Q&As on there as well for supporters if enough people join the movement, the Mad Few movement. So thank you very much for everybody who's still a patron, and Christmas is coming for some. And there's quite a lot of reward draws as well to be pulled in the next couple of weeks. Lots of goodies that Uncle Santa Moms has pulled out of his ball sack.
His ball bag.
Out of his sack. Right, moving on to... we're calling it Where Were You When We Were Good, and we still haven't recorded a jingle. That was the task we gave Dan, but he still hasn't.
I'm
gone
still
to
working
it.
On it.
Still hasn't got
where
that
were
sorted
you?
Out.
No.
Where were you when we were good? But actually, the game we've pulled it out of ball sack actually wasn't on our list that we'd compile to pick from over the next few weeks. But we thought
because we weren't any good.
Because we wanted to do a Villa Blues one, we've picked one because we don't feel we should be complacent going into this game at all.
Nope.
So we've actually picked a game where we actually lost at Villa Park. Shock horror. And we weren't actually that good in that period as well. I think we were just leaving the John Gregory period and Graham Taylor was the manager. And it wasn't the nightmare at St Andrews. It was the nightmare that was to come at Villa Park.
Was it March? Wasn't it March 03?
Yeah, so cast your minds back to March 03. Graham Taylor in the dugout. John Dean, ex-Villa player, as his assistant manager.
Potato Head in the other
Potato
dugout.
Potato Head celebrating like it's 1999 in the other dugout. Well, here's some of the highlights.
Revenge the order of the day as far as Villa are concerned as they get the game underway, kicking towards the Holt end. It's the 98th league derby between the second city rivals, and so much riding on it, and Robbie Savage going in for an early challenge on Stephen Moore. That was Alan Wright, and away by Kenny Cunningham. Savage may be setting the tone early on, and we... I'd expect to see one or two feisty challenges. Moore going in for the header. It's broken away to Hendry. It's an occasion that could be overwhelming for a 19-year-old like Moore, who only last season was the hero of the FA Youth Cup win. Here's Dugarry. Fantastic shot and wonderful save from Ankleman. Away by Cunningham. Now Savage. Oh, well, Dublin took him very late. Savage was tempted to react, but Mark Elsie intervened very quickly, and oh! Well, Savage has gone down. Did Dublin action.
Oh, I think there was some contact there. Theon Dublin was very annoyed about something Robbie Savage had said when he got up from that tackle. It was a reckless challenge, first of all, from Dion. He went to ground, something that you can't do these days. Chasing back on Savage.
It's a red card! Dublin is judged the guilty party by Mark Halsey, and he's sent off. And immediately the referee goes across to try and stop it getting completely out of hand on the pitch here. But Dion Dublin, who was sent off for an alleged headbutt against the Southampton player last season, but subsequently didn't seem that serious, has been sent off here now for allegedly putting his head into Robbie Savage.
Penna.
The cross in towards Horsfield. And it's Stan Lazaridis who gets the final touch and puts Birmingham ahead and on course for a league double.
J. Lloyd Samuel will be upset that he didn't follow Lazaridis' run. Samuel caught on his heels.
Samuel, away by Savage. Horsfield is giving chase for it. Samuel has to get the header right here. And Horsfield's taking it away from the goalkeeper. It's 2-0 to Birmingham City. And Jeff Horsfield is the man who has surely given them a league double over their local rivals. Horsfield, who scored at St Andrews, does so again. The back header from Samuel fell just short for Enkelman.
Really don't think the goalkeeper had got two controlled hands on that. There were no complaints from the keeper. What a moment for Steve Bruce.
Right, that was a furious, fiery encounter. But
on and off the pitch.
On and off the pitch. And ultimately, Villa just didn't have the cojones.
They bottled it completely, didn't they,
that season
in general.
They fell to the might of Horsfield. Is it Horsfield?
Fucking yeah. Horse apple, I don't
and
know.
Stan
fucking...
Lazar and Stan Lazaridis.
Oh, Stan Lazaridis. I mean, these are what? Sunday League players at best?
Jamie Clapham.
But that's
Jeff Kenner.
But in the realms of these derbies, you just need the Sunday League players to actually win it. You need that commitment. I mean, off the pitch, we go into this game with the government just releasing the figures on supporter arrests for the 2017-18 season, last season, in top spot, and I think they were top spot last season out of all the English clubs, Birmingham City, 95 arrests, 72% at St Andrews, 31 public disorder arrests. Then comes Sheffield United, third are Sunderland, 60 arrests. Portsmouth in at four. Fifth, always gets in the top five, Aston Villa.
Hooray! Boo, hiss.
48 arrests, which is pretty much half of what Birmingham City got. 33% at home games, 20 violent disorder arrests. Why is this derby so notorious? Well, pretty much because the fans are always in the top five of most arrests in a season. I think most of those arrests are in the two games, aren't they?
Probably. It's certainly a game that's, you know, outside of the Midlands is seen as a bit of a second-rate derby, but they just kind of don't get that it's quite a vicious local rivalry as opposed to one of sort of footballing prowess. It's very much a sort of a big brother versus little brother.
Interesting that a lot of the Blues arrests are at the home games at St Andrews, while Villa have only got only a third of their arrests are at home games. So it looks like it's more the away fans that get up to the high jinks. I think Aston Villa at home, it's kind of quite... I mean, there hasn't been any issues with the Blues in the recent games. I mean, obviously, it's been well policed. But anyway, sorry, we were on the subject of where were you when we were good. That game, I mean, it was scrappy, but then it kind of all kicked off in the second half, didn't it?
Yeah, it went mental, really, once Dublin had got sent off a horrific tackle and then the headbutt, and then it all went progressively
was it
downhill
really a headbutt?
From there. Allegedly, sorry.
Well, no, you can say if it was or not. I'm just asking your opinion. We're not.
Oh, it definitely was.
Court of law.
I'd like to. I'd like to think he meant it.
I'd like to think he meant it.
Because I remember. I remember he walked up to the camera when he got sent off and mouthed the words, "He's a cheat."
He's cheating a living, that's what he meant.
So I don't know if he was, because he was diving from the tackle. I don't think he was diving, because that went straight through him.
Yeah, he threw himself in the air,
but
he did
milk the headbutt. It wasn't really, he just put his face into his face, didn't he? He didn't swing his head back and nut him in Glasgow Kiss style.
But what it did cause was absolute fucking carnage, both on the pitch, in the stands.
And off the field. I remember the aftermath of that one. That was the moment where booking histories and all that stuff started coming in at Villa, where there were just Blues fans in all areas, wasn't it? It was fucking carnage. Yeah,
everywhere went up.
It was like running. I remember there was like running battles in the top of the Doug Ellis.
In the Doug Ellis, bloody hell.
In the upper tier of the Doug Ellis, yeah. They were flying down seats.
Bob Rowe going everywhere. It was fucking Villa dogs in people's eyes. Fucking, it was carnage, man. News and records being spanked.
And ultimately, it was two pretty bloody average sides.
It was a dreadful game of football. Both fixtures were often overlooked because of the Enkerman incident in the first, but it can't overlook the Enkerman incident in the second. Often, if you're a true purist of shocking goalkeeping, this is the one.
You shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but J. Lloyd Samuel didn't really help himself there. That head back was...
It wasn't a fucking header. It summed up his defending, which was dreadful forever. Consistently dreadful. But I will have no other words said
always
about him.
I always remember J. Lloyd. In I don't know what period was his Helsing years. It was when he used to dribble round about three. You'd get to the edge of their 18 and then start dribbling.
Shame it was out of his mouth.
I left that one a bit open there. But... He was in the England squad, was he not? He was like attacking full-back potential. He just lost it later on at Villa. He just lost it in his defending, and I think that was one of the key moments. That the Enkelman Samuel mix-up. I mean, Enkelman just looked shell-shocked in both of those games.
Yeah, Enkelman was a broken man after the first game, but
they should have after that first game. They should have given him one of those Petacek helmets to wear in the second game. that would have been the smartest move Graham Taylor could have made.
He was broken, wasn't he? I don't know about one of those Petacek ones. Just one of those BDSM ones where he looks like a giant gimp mask.
They should have given him the Gary Mabbott Phantom of the Opera mask. and then over the top of that, put the Petacek helmet on just to hold him together.
It'll be all right, Peter. Come on. No, I don't want to go out. No, I don't go on. No.
That was the end of him. But I mean, if you look back on the video, you'll see a slimmer Steve Bruce doing cartwheels down the side of the Holt. Down the side of the Trinity Road stand. Yeah, they didn't show that on social media when they employed him.
No, they didn't.
Remember, Good Johnson as well getting sent off in the last 10 minutes or so.
He just lost his head completely, didn't they? As the whole ground did a thing. As soon as that second goal went in, it just went mental for the last sort of 10 minutes. It became a really sort of vicious, nasty occasion then.
Crouch was in the squad then. He came on in the last minute. Yeah. Little did we know, he was coming on as a 90th minute sub in that team.
To Alan Wright.
And starting was Stephen Moore.
Talk about little and large. Jesus Christ.
Swapping a hobbit for Gigantor. Fucking Alan Wright. Look at that defence. We've got J. Lloyd Samuel, who basically...
Played a right back.
Probably needed
J. Lloyd Samuel, a left-footed right back.
Ronnie Johnson, who was 96 years old.
give or take a year or two.
So basically, we were just playing with Melberg at the back, and then we subbed right for Crouch.
Melberg was already sending his CV off to Juventus. Just get me out of
get
here.
Get me the fuck out of here.
But and
Stephen Possmer's following me around.
Gareth Barry was pondering to himself, there must be life better than this somewhere else at another club. Maybe
God,
Liverpool.
Dreadful.
I think him and Melberg were probably about the only two that lasted after that season, really, didn't they? As soon as O'Leary came in, that squad got dismantled very quickly.
He started. Got the took Moore off brothers. At half time for being crap, and Hadji came on. I mean, he should have played Crouch from the off, I think, in that game. Maybe he didn't fancy him, I don't know, didn't fancy the physicality of the game. But Crouch and Dublin up front, just pump it up, away you go. Although, if I remember, Hendry had a chance. I think he had Villa's first chance. If that went in, then probably a different story. But
summed up his Villa career, really. That it was people can be revisionist,
and it summed up that whole season in general. Villa were crap all that year, weren't they? Remember the derbies? We were dreadful in most of the games. I think we beat the Albion in the last minute. Other than that, in all the sort of the derby games and the bigger games, we were really poor, and we're kind of relatively lucky to stay up in the end. I think we only stayed up in the last, like the final home game.
Yeah,
of the season.
They should have like put it over the reception as you go into Villa Park in stone that this can never happen again. Getting doubled by the Blues, and the Blues did it because they were just fired up. They were more committed in both of the games, and the crowd, once the crowd got wild up, they turned it into a firefight. Got the crowd riled up, and they just outdid us.
And since, you know, Blue, it's no coincidence that when Villa actually play their game and play football, Blues have won one of the last 14 between the two sides. It's not a coincidence that when Villa sort of try and play the Blues way, it backfires.
It evens up the contest. If we play our way, then they can't really lay a glove on us most of the time. I mean, when it's at St Andrews, it's a lot tighter and it's a lot cagier. I mean, it might be a bit different this season. We shall see. By the time we play them second half of the season, we might be like the Harlem Globetrotters blowing teams away. But I'm just basing that on the last last 20 minutes against Derby, really. that's the only scientific sample I've got to justify that outlandish statement.
I've quite enjoyed the fact that we do a segment called "Where Were You When We Were Good?" and we picked a game when Villa were truly appalling.
We need to remain grounded.
We had the options of like 5-1 wins, last minute wins at St Andrews, games that virtually relegated them. Gary Cahill's goal.
But this is so much better. Concentrated Aston Villa. That just looking at the names. I mean, just take. Hadji was a player who allegedly Villa weren't playing because they didn't want to activate his fee to Coventry, you know, so he'd appear in these sort of smidgeny things. Posma?
Oh.
Hitzlsperger?
Strap on.
Hitzlsperger was on the bench. He wasn't even used.
No.
Strap
on. Johnson. Look at, you know, our midfield, our centre midfield was.
Strap on.
To a Poshma.
I'm talking about Poshma. Strap on. We're talking about his wife putting a strap on. And there's a video. I think you could probably still find it on the internet. Just look up Stefan Poshma.
Greatest Aston Villa moment.
Greatest historical Aston Villa moment. Maybe throw in strap on in the Google search.
I mean, just type that in anyway.
And maybe something like by his wife. There's another word, but we couldn't possibly say that.
Mm.
Who's Edwards?
Rob Edwards, the guy who went on to Wolves?
Yeah.
Many years. In fact, he may still be there.
Yeah.
In a coaching... coaching.
He's coaching, isn't he now?
Anyway, the reason why we went with this one, because as we said, we like to pick idiosyncratic moments, not the greatest moments, where we can actually learn something. And what we learned from this game was, A, do not be complacent. B, don't sign a load of crap players.
Yeah, we didn't really learn from that, did we?
No, we didn't. Mm. And C, play your own game when you're playing the Blues and dictate it. Because last season game at Villa Park against the Blues, for my money, was probably the most, and this is even including the Wolves game, was the most controlled performance from across the whole 90 minutes of any Villa performance that season.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember last year's game because the Blues had come off quite a good run, hadn't they? And it was considered from their side that this is the best chance they're going to have to beat Villa. Yeah. Villa were on a good run at the time as well. I think that was the seventh win on the bounce for Villa. And everyone was a bit nervy going to the game. But within about 20 minutes, I kind of thought, you know what? Actually, we look pretty good here. And as soon as we got the first goal, we were never going to lose from that point. And Blues never looked like scoring.
I remember Cottrell's comments, and I am paraphrasing, that he felt his team were overawed by walking out into Villa Park and...
He said they lacked any kind of belief, didn't they?
And that's because Birmingham City are a small-time, clog-dancing, squirrel fucking...
No, that's Fulham.
Sorry. Inbred, no mark, worthless, stain upon a otherwise fine city.
Hopefully.
And they shall receive an additional beating this Sunday, lunchtime, and the world will once again...
And in the form of administration when they breach
financial
fair play.
I mean, they've got a ridiculously named stadium.
The Trillion Trophy.
let's not drop the level of decorum on the show.
Fucking nobody.
Just one last, going back to the Purslow thing, the final notes before we leave you for this episode. Financial fair play, you just mentioned it there. Purslow addressed that. I think that was one of his 3 points he brought up before we got on our agenda. And he said they are quietly confident. There's not going to be any problems. He obviously knows the financial fair play, having sat on one of the working boards that kind of derived it. And he said, you know, we are addressing it, blah, blah, blah. And we are quietly confident that everything will be all right, blah, blah. And then later on, I asked a follow-up question when I was addressing what happened to the recon training complex. I said, in terms of financial fair play, are there choppy waters to be navigated, or are you like confident as any other club would be of meeting them? And he did admit that they were choppy waters to navigate first. So it's not, you know, it's not let's all kick back and lean back in deck chairs and smoke cigars because we're going to be all right. There is obviously a bit of thought still to go in. And I think it depends on where we, in terms of the transfer window and what's going to happen, I think it really depends where we sit in the league table going into that January month. Because if we're beyond hope in the lower half of the league and showing no signs of life, I don't think they'll be venturing forth getting in, let's say, any name to kick us on. But if we're in there, then I think they'll be pretty bullish that we can actually make it this season.
I mean, I think they'll know that, similarly to what Wolves had last year, that they know that the best way to get rid of all the problems is by getting promoted.
And that was what we were gambling on last time. But I think there's other chapters of this story of the 2018-19 season, but I think it's actually, the book is just beginning now. The first few chapters were a bit waffly, really, and a bit nondescript, but now we're getting into the meat and gravy. Hopefully it starts with a comfortable win against the Blues. Right, until we're dancing naked down Broad Street at the weekend, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.